Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. So good to be with you. Thank you for listening. Coming up on the program today from the Baldwin County Economic Development Alliance, President CEO Lee Lawson will join us here at the bottom of the hour. We also got my friend from WVNN Live Local, Dale Jackson, will be with us in the 10 o'clock hour. 11 o'clock hour, State Representative Brent Easterbrook. We're going to talk to him about ALDOT widening United States Highway 45. It seems to have been left off the priority list of ALDOT for the last, several decades. Then we'll have Congressman Bradley Byrd also at 11 o'clock hour. A lot going on the program today. Make sure that you stay tuned for that. A few things going on. Obviously, keep an eye on tropical weather, getting a little rain from that. Could be a lot worse, I suppose, but driving across the Bayway today, yeah, I mean, this is I'm back in Mobile again. Something I got to deal with, as y'all all deal with, I guess, every fall. But this looks like this Marco doesn't look like it's quite the threat that it could be. It looks like it's going to head off to the west. But we're keeping an eye on that. Well, we'll talk more about that throughout the program. Some things going on. We'll get right into the news. RNC convention this week starts tonight. The theme, we are told, we're looking at a positive theme. And let's compare this to the Democratic theme, was dark, negative. Donald Trump's got to go. Brighter days are ahead if we could just get past Donald Trump. And the contrast here, it's a no-brainer. You got to go positive. And I think that's Republicans' natural role is positive. Expect that. Now, what you shouldn't expect, don't expect, look to the playbook to go back to the big tent party. That we're including libertarians, we're including Tea Partiers, we're including the populist. Because that's the coalition. I mean, we always talk about the Democratic coalition, how it's made up of all these special interest groups and what they care about, the tree-huggers, the pro-choicers. Then you got, you know, the people, the anti-war crowd, and they all form this big tent held together. The glue that holds them together is the disgust for one Donald J. Trump. But look for Republicans to try to appeal to make a broad coalition as well. Remember in 2016, it was all about judges or not having Hillary Clinton president. So I think Republicans recognize they need a unifying theme. That's what I would expect throughout this week. Now, we got State Representative Andrew Sorrell coming on tomorrow. He is the chairman of the Alabama delegation. He's in Charlotte. He will be the guy that announces the delegates for state of Alabama. So, like, you'll see when they do the call, the roll call with the states, you'll see him on. He represents, he's state representative for Muscle Shoals, but he was elected by his fellow delegates to be the chairman of the delegation. So he'll be the guy. We're going to try to get him on a couple of times. He gets to obviously announce Alabama's delegates, but he also on Thursday will be at the White House to see Donald Trump's acceptance speech, and we're going to get him on Friday morning to react to that. So we're going to get him on a couple of times this week, kind of watching, keeping an eye on what's going on with the Republican National Convention. Big news this weekend, right? United States Postal Service. Did you, anybody kind of keep an eye on what was going on Saturday? I mean, there was a flurry of activity, four speeches, members of the Alabama delegation talking about the United States Postal Service. And really, I guess what it led to, by a vote of 257 to 150 in the House of Representatives, with a bunch of Republicans going along with it, voted to go ahead with the stop of the restricting the Postal Service, keep the Postal Service from doing any of these changes or quote unquote reforms, and offer $25 billion in funding. It's and then this comes today. Now here's something else kind of related to this. The Postmaster General Louis DeJoy will testifying before the House today. So he testified for the Senate last week. Expect this House hearing to be way, way, way more contentious. But the weaponization of the United States Postal Service still seems a very bizarre notion to me. And I think it's going to lose traction at some point. The Democrats, after this will be the last hurrah today in the House hearing. It's not... What is weird is watching Democrats shout from the rooftops, the mountaintops or whatever, about how corrupt this is and what Donald Trump's trying to do to sway an election. It's not catching on, no. No one's going to go out and vote because they fear the mail won't be delivered if Donald Trump's still president. Really, you got to look at like what the last 4 years were with Donald Trump in the Postal Service. Has anybody had any disruptions in mail or anything like that? So you're manufacturing an issue that contradicts reality. Because we kind of know what life is like under President Donald Trump in the Postal Service and getting your mail delivered. And now we're going to be told that for some reason, in the later stages of 2020, Donald Trump's going to wreck the Postal Service, and it's somehow going to mess up elections. And it's a very tenuous connection. I'm not convinced that many people are going to go mail-in ballot where it's available, as many as they think it is. And if they do so, it's going to be blue states anyway. I mean, maybe you have Colorado. I would say that's a blue state by now. Alaska's a red state, but there's not enough electoral votes. We're talking about Oregon, Nevada, some places like that. Maybe in Nevada it matters. But this issue is just manufactured. No one believes this. It's not going to stick. Watch Democrats make a big deal about it. I think the best thing to do... guys like me are going to hem and haw about, oh, this is dumb, this is stupid, this isn't rooted in reality. Let the Democrats run with this. If they think they can win the 2020 election off the Postal Service, then let them. Let them think that. Because this is a much more complicated thing going on in a presidential election cycle than trying to make it about the Postal Service. But that's Pelosi's role in all of this. I mean, think about Nancy Pelosi. For the first time, she's Speaker of the House. So she was Speaker of the House previously after the 2006 midterm. But they also had, Democrats also had the Senate and the White House. Later on, they would have the White House. They didn't have it there at the end of the Bush years, right? But for the first time, she is the lone wolf, right? Or her caucus is the lone wolf caucus or whatever. It's important. She controls the House of Representatives, and that's no small thing. But she is outnumbered, the White House and the Senate. So she is the loyal opposition, let's say. And that's why I think you see so much Nancy Pelosi these days. Because previously, when Nancy Pelosi was Speaker, it was a big deal. It was a big get to get a one-on-one with Nancy Pelosi to get her to sit down for an interview. She just didn't do interviews. Now she does like three a day. Really overexposure, I think, of Nancy Pelosi. But you kind of look at what's going on here, and all of this opposition, all these things like the Postal Service, impeachment, they're all coming out of the House. And I don't think the House was necessarily set up to be that political opposition. I mean, it's essentially serving that right now. But it wasn't intended to do that. So, like, with Pelosi or Adam Schiff, or you could go down the list of Democrat congressmen, you see a lot of James Clyburn these days. You don't see as much Steny Hoyer, the House Majority Leader. But you see a lot of House Democrats out in front of everything. Whereas, traditionally, you would expect to see Joe Biden out in front of everything. Shouldn't Joe Biden be the one doing all the interviews? Are his surrogates? Who are Joe Biden's surrogates? And they're Democrat congressmen and women. I find that to be a very unnatural setting. And then you have the situation where on a Saturday, Pelosi's able to call the House back in, get everybody back in D.C. to vote for a for a U.S. Postal Service bill. Now, the bill we were just speaking of, as I said, it puts a halt on any efforts to change things, to reforms or measures that might that could be implemented for the before the 2020 election, and it gives the Postal Service $25 billion. It's probably DOA in the Senate. Even if Mitch McConnell gives in to pressure and says, all right, let's vote for it, and it somehow passes, which it very well could, Donald Trump will veto it. They're not going to have a veto-proof majority. This thing is dead. This is a messaging bill, ladies and gentlemen. And it's to sow the seeds of doubt inside the head of you guys that think there might be some shenanigans in the 2020 election. That's all this is. But it's the bigger picture here is, wow, Nancy Pelosi's really out in front of everything right now. Is that the best face for the Democratic opposition? I don't say that. It maybe she's a little hard on the eyes. I don't mean it that way, but like that people, she has lots of negatives, and she doesn't evoke positive emotions, especially in red states. She evokes a lot of negativity in Alabama. This is something Congressman Griffith, the former congressman from North Alabama, who was a Democrat, and he was a Republican, and he was a Democrat again. He's like, the Republicans will not make headway in these red states as long as Nancy Pelosi is the is out front, the figurehead. So if Nancy Pelosi, if that's true in a red state, is that true in a purple state as well? And I would have to think so, because you're trying to win over some Republicans, but you see Nancy Pelosi and you're like, I don't think so. I'm sticking with Trump here. So if it's Pelosi versus Trump, Trump's going to win. Trump versus Biden, maybe it's a different ballgame. But you know, everything we've seen to this date right now, it looks like Pelosi is the one running against Donald Trump. Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi, here's the thing, guys. If the Democrats don't win in November, if they don't win the White House, if Pelosi's this far out on a branch, she may lose her speakership. She's gone all in here. Watch these Democrats. It's very fascinating. Maybe, you know, the Democrats could very well keep the House of Representatives. But what's Pelosi's role in this? And she's staked out a big, big position here in this election, getting involved in it, a very out there with the media, has a very out there media strategy. And I think this all kind of works together. But it also shows you this. Biden's still not the dominant force in this election that he needs to be. And I think that's going to matter later on down the road. But the Pelosi factors, not the Speaker of the House. Think back to past elections. How many past presidential elections have you ever seen a Speaker of the House this involved? Do you remember Newt Gingrich being really involved in the 96 election? Maybe. But go forward after that. John Boehner? You want John Boehner running with you and George W. Bush? Probably not. Dennis Hastert, where's he now? So just go through these speakers. Paul Ryan? Paul Ryan couldn't get... Every time he saw Donald Trump, he ran away until he won the presidency. And even on the Democrat side, when Barack Obama was president, see this much Pelosi? Oh, you saw Barack Obama everywhere. So that's, you know, this is very bizarre. It's very unusual that all the energy is coming out of the House of Representatives. So we'll talk more to Congressman Byrd about that. And it's just doesn't seem to work real well for the Democratic Party to have the House Speaker be the front person. Got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Should have died out a long time before.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. So good to be with you on this Monday morning. Coming up in the next segment, Lee Hollison from the Baldwin County Economic Development Alliance will be with us. We'll talk about population growth in Baldwin County and the mega site. What's going on with that? Really, Baldwin County's in a unique position. We don't think about it as a place where you put a lot of focus for economic development, but they do have issues. Most places, whenever you talk to a county commissioner or a one of these mayors throughout Alabama, they will tell you that it's all about workforce development, workforce training, and the such. But Baldwin County uniquely positioned. So we'll get with him here. That's in the next segment. So that I want to bring up. It just made my skin crawl this weekend. Ale.com staking out bars in Auburn, Alabama. And, well, this young lady, she is the Gianna Hahn is her name. Her position is to cover Auburn athletics, football, basketball, baseball, etc. You always have a beat writer for Auburn, a beat writer for Alabama, and back in the day you had a beat writer for Troy, UAB. Oh, man. So, Gianna, very, I think, ambitious reporter here, decides to go to Sky Bar. Now, Sky Bar is the cool place to go in Auburn now. Back when I was there, it was like the War Eagle Supper Club. When the Sky Bar when I was there was like it was Ultravox for a while. I think it was the Blue Room after that. But now they have the people who have taken Sky Bar have raised the stakes here. It's a whole new level with Sky Bar. It is open air in a lot of places. It's got multi levels. It's like something you would see in Nashville. It's impressive. It's not a place I would probably frequent had I still been 1990s Jeff Port, Auburn, Alabama. But I went there, it was the Al Gop dinner. A bunch of us went there, and I had to go check it out because you hear so much about it. And it's the place. Every college has the place, and that is the place. Well, this young lady goes and decides she's going to go carry a camera around, take pictures of people, not social distancing, not wearing a mask. And doing things that are not of the CDC guidelines, and then tweet about it, telling people, I think to shame college students. Look, I'm not condoning college students going and congregating in big packs, but who said it? We ought to have Ale.com doing this. And is it really this? I'm not. Maybe it's not even this reporter's fault. This is I work at journalism, and I have people that say, hey, you need to go cover this. It's the institution of Ale.com. I find it just, I don't know, like we have to go tattletale on a bunch of college students at Auburn University and try to shame them for not doing what they're told or whatever, or whatever it is. I think this is the ultimate solution. This is the ultimate goal. Have government come in. Have the city of Auburn, state of Alabama come in and tell these people, you can't do this. You go home right now like they are high school kids. These are grown adults that pay taxes. They could go serve their country in the military. They're at the Sky Bar. They are making their own determinations. They are adults. And you don't want to treat them like adults is what that tells me. But why would you do that to people? Anyway, kind of fascinating. If you go to this Twitter feed of this reporter, I think it's just Gianna Hahn on Twitter, you find a several one-finger salutes given her way for being there and trying to shame these kids for not whatever adhering to coronavirus guidelines or protocol. I fully anticipate you won't get to see this in the future, that it's the city of Auburn and the state of Alabama are not going to want to see are not going to want to see this kind of media coverage. Hey Grant, right, text, they need to act like adults if they want that respect. They are acting like adults. They're making decisions for themselves. They were children. We could tell them to go home and slap them on the wrist. Or if this is such a big deal, here's what you need to do. The governor has these guidelines. Go in there and start writing citations. If you're going to have a mandate, treat it like a mandate. Don't treat it like it's some kind of, you know, suggestions. You either have the mandate or you don't. And if they're not going to enforce the mandate, then don't expect people to adhere to the mandate. That's an adult decision. That is a rational decision. I know the mandate, but they're not enforcing it, so screw you, I'm going to have a good time. I can tell you, 1998 Jeff Poore would have been right there with them, making bad decisions. But I don't think it's the media's role to do this. It really, AL.com wouldn't be doing this at a BLM rally, would they? Anyway, let me know what you think. 251-343-0106. We're going to take a time out. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Muddy water, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me. Carry on, sweet southern comfort, carry on. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Coming up in the next hour from WVNN Live Local, Dale Jackson will be with us at 11 o'clock hour. We got State Representative Brett Easterbrook. Talk about some highway issues, some other things, maybe the possibility of a special session. And then Congressman Bradley Byrne, he'll be with us also in the 11 o'clock hour. Make sure you stay tuned. Join us in studio now. Happy to introduce my next guest. He is the President and CEO of the Baldwin County Economic Development Alliance. Lee Lawson is here with us. Lee, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Good morning, Jeff. Good to be with you.
Good morning, yeah. So tell me, Lee, well, let me get you in here to talk about some things pertaining to Baldwin County. But first, before we do that, let's talk about what exactly is the Economic Development Alliance and give our listeners kind of an idea of what you do on a daily basis.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Alliance is a private, nonprofit organization. We were created a little over 20 years ago in Baldwin County, and anyone that knows Baldwin County knows it's a big geographic place to cover, very diverse both geographically, economically. So they private sector and public sector leaders came together to create our organization. The five chambers of commerce in Baldwin County appoint my board of directors, all private sector business people that we answer to. We're funded by the county, every municipality in the county, and then over 100 private businesses support our endeavors.
So that's a big organization.
Truly, yeah. Its name, an alliance of all of Baldwin County to promote and further economic development.
And all these companies are organizations. They all come at it from different angles because, well, Baldwin County is so different from Little River all the way to Floribama. There, you have a lot of different interests, a lot of competing interests, and I guess you kind of make it. Somehow, you know, you get these guys kind of working together, which it might seem a little more difficult than just thinking about it at face value.
Sure. I mean, Little River to Floribama, that is the spectrum. That's one end to the other. But, yeah, I mean, we do. We have, you know, I tell people all the time, Baldwin County can sometimes be categorized as three counties in one.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's big geographically. It's diverse economically. And you see that from top to bottom and east to west. But, yeah, I mean, and that's really why our organization was stood up 20 years ago. Leadership saw that the need for one voice, one group representing the entire county without any geographic bias, really focused on the mission of economic development, growing jobs and growing our community outside of what still is our main economic driver, tourism.
Yeah, and that's what most people around the state think of when we talk about Baldwin County. Oh, that's the beach, right? Yeah, or even when you talk about Mobile, ironically, it's just one big beach here, but there's a lot of geography there, and there's a lot of you know, Baldwin County is very fortunate economically, but there's a lot of more potential there that hasn't been fulfilled, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think we get lost a lot of times in the talk of Gulf Shores and Orange Beach, because that's the prism through which a lot of people see Baldwin County or experience it. And there's nothing wrong with that. We love that. We all the time with our friends in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores say, you know, you're the gateway a lot of times to opportunities for us. And they say all the time, we want to be the sizzle to your steak. And, right. And they are a lot of times. And we're able to show that quality of life, that piece to not only executive leadership that we're talking to, but then when folks get here and invest here, they see that as a great bonus that they get by locating an office or their next investment in our community.
So what are the challenges? Because typically when I go around the state a lot, and you know, whenever you talk to these civic leaders, these politicians, they tell you it's workforce development and it's infrastructure. Maybe a little bit of different challenges in Baldwin County. You always have room for better workforce development. Infrastructure is pretty good in Baldwin County, comparatively speaking, to the rest of the state. But do you have other things you have to look at that maybe you wouldn't look at in like Kanaka County or Monroe County or wherever?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're different in a lot of respects, but we're also the same. I mean, 10 years ago plus. Site Selection Magazine, which is a big publication in our industry, always comes out with an annual list of the top 10 site location factors that are driving business to make their decision on the next location. And really, workforce was always in the top 10, but steadily over the years, it has risen to the number one location factor that business and industry are considering. And for us, I mean, we share that, and like everybody else, we've consistently been at the top of the state for unemployment, you know, because of the seasonality of our workforce and some of the, you know, the workforce pinch that tourism puts on our workforce. We've always been in that low category number. So that's always a piece of it. Infrastructure will always be a piece of what every community wants to enhance and continue to invest in, especially with our growth that we've seen. Infrastructure investment continues to be a driver, not only at the municipal level, because we have, you know, 13 plus, you know, municipalities and counting in Baldwin County, and just the growth, not only from a jobs perspective, but also from a people perspective, has driven that, at least that location factor for us and our community, up to the top of the list too.
And when you talk to the mayors, we had Karen Wilson in here, and I've talked to Dane Haygood, and they, the growth, you have the growth. It becomes more of an issue of dealing with the growth and maintaining that quality of life. For, you know, you got to find that balance, because I think a lot of people would just come locate in Baldwin County if they could, but you got to have the infrastructure, not just roads or whatever, but the, you know, internet and the sewer system and things like that. Keeping up with that's got to be a big component, right?
It is, and we have, I mean, I think for a lot of our municipalities, the growth has come very sharply over the last decade. You know, when you have four of the top five fastest growing cities in the state all in one county, like we had, I think, last year on that list, it does. It presents challenges, but it also presents opportunities. I mean, if you look across the state and really across the nation, sales tax numbers are flat, if not regressive. And that trend was happening across the country. And here in Baldwin County, you know, all of our tax revenue streams were up,
right?
And increasing. You know, the Amazon effect had not hit our community, and I think that's a positive of growth. And that's how Alabama, the law in Alabama and the way that cities and government are funded, it's sales tax driven, and really largely our schools have benefited from it too. And so we have to continue that growth to keep adding to that quality of life. I don't think growth takes away from it, but we do. We have a lot of municipal utilities, and so a lot of them are getting their arms around that growth and then how to invest for the future growth as well.
And something I saw you tweeted here, over a third of the growth in the state of Alabama since 2014 has come in Baldwin County.
That's right.
That seems
staggering.
Yeah, because we always, you know, I was like Huntsville, Madison County, Limestone County, that's the hot spot. But, you know, that the reality is it's Baldwin County that's rocking and rolling right now.
It is. And, I mean, our friends in Madison are doing a great job as well, and they're seeing their fair share of growth. But if you really look across the state, 67 counties, really only about 9 counties across the entire state are showing any signs of significant growth over a pretty, you know, a 5-year trend. And, I mean, that was a piece of some of the conversation we had when, you know, the gas tax was passed. You know, they wanted to revisit growth every 10 years. And, you know, the fast-growing counties and those that were experiencing growth kind of said, hey, why don't we reevaluate it sooner than that, because the apportionment formula should benefit those that are growing, right? And so, I mean, it's things like that we see. But we have seen a ton of growth, and it's been in migration. I think locally and geographically, people want to say, oh, that's just people leaving Mobile headed to Baldwin County. And really, that's not a large portion of our growth.
Really?
It's not. I mean, our in-migration, net in-migration from outside our region makes up like 70%+ of our growth. And so, I mean, it's not this regional shift. It is truly we are attracting people from outside our region, and the types of people we're attracting are educated, high-income earners. I mean, by and large, when you look at the data.
A text question here, and I kind of wondered this as well, from David. Baldwin Beach Express, these kinds of projects, these big road projects, connect the county from one end to the other. What do you think? Do you think that's something we need to look at, that could be a positive?
Yeah, man, I think any investment in our infrastructure is a positive. Road infrastructure, especially when you see this growth, we're not a public transit community.
Right.
So you look at all the growth, we're adding not only people, but we're adding cars to the roadways. And so we see it in our vehicle registrations. We actually have more vehicles registered in Baldwin County than per capita. So, I mean, you've got, you know, almost, I think it's 1.5 to 2 vehicles per person in Baldwin County registered. And so we see that. We see that strain on our infrastructure. We've seen the positive. I mean, look at the Baldwin Beach Express South, when it connected to I-10, and what it's done to take the burden off of Highway 59 and create another artery. We don't like to talk about it, but since it's in the news right now, I mean, the H-word is happening in our region. So you also need, in our part of the state, in our part of the country, you need evacuation routes too, and you need to be able to get people safely out of communities sometimes. And so any investment in infrastructure, but especially road infrastructure, is critical.
Was that Rebuild Alabama Act? We raised the gas taxes. That was going to change our lives significantly. Do you see Baldwin County benefiting from that yet, really?
I mean, not really. I mean, you know, just this year started the collection of those monies, you know, so I think time will tell, and it'll tell in how the state also invests in that infrastructure. We always use this example when we're advocating on behalf of Baldwin County, not only in Alabama but in D.C. is, you know, if you own a business and you've got multiple divisions of your business, and you've got a really high growth division that's producing a lot of revenue for your business, wouldn't you invest in that piece of your business?
Right. Yeah.
So Baldwin County is that for the state of Alabama. We are the net income earner. We are the net contributor to the budget. So why wouldn't you continue to invest in that community, especially when it pertains to road infrastructure, where we do partner with the state? A lot of our roads in Baldwin County are state roads. And so for that purpose, yeah, we hope to see the benefit from that, and we hope to, you know, continue to work with our state partners to say, hey, this is a high growth county for us and a net income contributor. Let's continue to invest in the infrastructure there alongside Baldwin County.
Let's talk about the mega site.
Yeah.
Real quick, give us a rundown what that is, where it is, and it's something that I think you guys have been working on for some time now.
Yeah. So the South Alabama mega site is a 3,000 acre industrial mega site at exit 37 on I-65 and Highway 287. It was purchased by Baldwin County about 7.5-8 years ago now, and we've been marketing it for large economic development projects and have been preparing it and adding to it. And every time we're involved in a project, talking to a corporate entity, and we may come up a little short, we always improve that, not only on our workforce but on the site itself. And so we've been We've been very competitive and very close several times, and we're continuing that those efforts and doing about $7 million worth of site work now through a state program called the Growing Alabama Tax Credit Program with our partners at CSX Railways and Alabama Power.
So it has connections nearby Interstate 65. And it's got rail connection.
That's correct. It's got CSX mainline. It's got all the utilities are in place there. Water, wastewater, natural gas, high voltage electricity for a what we consider a mega project in our business.
So that's it. Checks all the boxes. Really, if not to divulge too much, but like what kind of industries that you would see is what would they put there, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, so some of the industry sectors that we compete for, automotive assembly, of course, right. Our state has shown a high location quotient for that, not only just and built a lot of infrastructure around that industry. Aerospace, which our region has shown a very high location quotient for, with Airbus's location here, of course. And then some other high-value advanced manufacturing, you've got metals, consumer products, several of those type of industries that we see can take and create a large amount of jobs and a huge amount of capital investment in one project.
And you got a lot of other chips you can put on the table, good schools, you got a workforce, not just Baldwin County, but you could draw from Mobile, you could draw from all these other places. It seems like that mega site ought to be a good you gotta have a lot of selling points you could have that maybe some other places don't really necessarily have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, proximity to the people is a big piece. When you're talking to companies about creating, 1,000+ jobs at one site, the geography matters, the people matter. Within a 50-mile radius, we have 1.2 million people in that radius of the site, and that's, that's good for us, and it's growing, and that's a piece that companies want to see. They want to see the growth happening in a region because they're investing not only for year one, they're investing for year 20+, and so they want to see that continued growth in where they're investing.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick time out here. We'll be right back on the other side with Lee Lawson, the president CEO of the Baldwin County Economic Development Alliance. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Every gambler knows that the secret...
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Happy Monday to you, 55 minutes after the hour. Just got a few moments remaining here with Lee Lawson of the Baldwin County Economic Development Alliance. Lee, the legislature, there's some economic development packages set to expire later this year. How important to these, you have a good perspective and understanding of this. How important is this? And just really, does it put you in a difficult position maybe trying to recruit in the future?
No, I mean, it definitely. So we've got, the state's incentives were redone and were kind of reauthored about 5 years ago, and they were done so that it would not, the way we addressed some economic development incentives in the past were to borrow and funds, and we set it to be through Secretary Greg Canfield and at the time Governor Bentley under their leadership really made our incentives so that they're performance based. The company has to perform, they have to hire, they have to invest to then receive the benefit. And that was very positive. That was a positive step in the right direction. One part of that legislation was there's a sunset on it. So
right.
A 5-year sunset to be able to revisit them and reauthorize them and see if we can tweak them to do better and be more competitive and then see how they're being allocated across the state. And just this year, the pandemic and the session not happening, we were teed up, ready to get those reauthorized and had a lot of support both from the executive level and the legislature, and just it didn't happen. So, so we're hopeful that, a special session can happen this year and to address that. And there's several other things out there that need to be addressed, but that is one of them and one that has full support from all areas.
Yeah, because that one seems like we're not talking about any of these other hot button issues of the day, but this is everybody wants economic development, economic growth. That is the topic du jour for a lot of these policymakers right now, that we got to do this for economic growth. and to know that these incentive packages are got a sunset provision that you really need that special session to get before the end of the year.
Yeah, it would be good, and you know we're looking ahead, and if that doesn't happen, I think you know. I know that the governor and Secretary Canfield are working on that. I know that
could something be done at the executive level without the legislature?
I don't know that. I mean, that's probably a question for them. But you know, I know that it's a top priority at their level and even in the legislature too. I mean, I know all of our legislators in Baldwin County are, you know, that's a number one priority for them too, as they've been big time supporters of economic development. But yeah, I mean, it's a piece of it's a big piece of the puzzle, especially for like a project in the mega site. I mean, the large projects especially, that's a big piece of what we're talking to companies about. And I think the fact that it's performance-based, you can look back over the last 5 years and see that these incentives are not a drain on the budget. They are truly performance-based, and the state is getting employees, new payroll, and new investment out of these incentives.
Lee Lawson, as always, thanks for making time for us.
Jeff, thanks so much. Glad to be with you.
We'll do it again real soon.
Look forward to it.
All right, we got to get out of here, guys. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5.
She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.